Hello and welcome to Howl Radio.
Black History. Be proud of all the accomplishments that African Americans have made to make America the wonderful, successful country it is today.
Hello. This is Thomasine Holloway bringing you Holloway's Black History Moments. And today, we will talk about George Washington Carver. George Washington Carver, one man, single-handedly saved the southern states' agricultural economy. From about 1800 through the end of the Civil War, southern planters raised mainly cotton and tobacco, so that by the 20th century their soil was exhausted and without nutrients. Small farmers especially were in financial trouble because they didn't believe they could make money if they didn't raise those two crops. They were illiterate about good scientific agriculture. Into this situation stepped George Washington Carver, a trained agricultural researcher. Carver was born a slave in 1864 on the farm of Moses Carver, his owner. When he was 2 years old, George and his mother were kidnapped by night riders. Moses Carver hired men to look for George and his mother, but by the time they found George, his mother had been sold, and George was an orphan. George was a sickly child, and as a result, he couldn't run, play, or do heavy chores. So George spent most of his time indoors with Carver's wife, who taught him to read, write, and draw. And being highly motivated, George stayed at the farm until he was 10 years old. And then he left the Carver farm to get an education as a teenager, because schools in the town where they lived did not accept Negroes. George left Carver's farm in Diamond Grove, Missouri, and moved to Neosho, where he cleaned and did chores for a family in exchange for room and board. The school in Neosho was only one room and was filled with children freed by the Emancipation Proclamation. After a year or so, George felt he had learned all there was to learn in this school. So when a colored family announced they were moving to Kansas, George asked if he could ride along with them. George was 13 when he decided to move to Kansas. In Kansas, George spent a decade living in many different communities, and he worked at many different things, including homesteading, laundry work, baking, and other household skills he had learned from Susan Carver. George attended schools wherever he was. In the 1880s, Carver ended up in Winterset, Iowa, where he met a white couple, the Mulhollands. They encouraged him to apply for admission to Simpson College. He needed encouragement because 2 years earlier, he had been accepted at Highland College, but when he got there, they told him they didn't admit colored students. At Simpson, Carver was an art major, but he met a teacher there who learned of his interest in botany and suggested he take courses in this subject because a black man would not be able to make a living as an artist. Next, Carver transferred to Iowa State College to pursue his interest in botany and agriculture. After earning a bachelor's degree in botany at Iowa State College, he earned a Master of Agriculture degree there in 1896. When he graduated from Iowa State, they wanted him to stay on and teach. However, Booker T. Washington came to the college to recruit Carver for the Tuskegee College in Alabama. George Washington Carver was the only African American in this country with graduate training in agriculture. And Washington wanted an agricultural teacher for his college. Tuskegee provided Carver with the opportunity to fulfill what he saw as his God-given mission to use his training as an agricultural scientist for the betterment of poor Southern farmers, especially black farmers. Carver loved research and believed he could make his greatest contribution doing research, but Washington wanted him to teach and chair the science department at Tuskegee. The men disagreed. Soon, Washington died in 1915, and his successor allowed Carver to do his research and limited his teaching. Carver lived in the student dormitory and provided counseling to students for the remainder of his years at Tuskegee. When Carver arrived in Alabama, farmers were planting only two crops, cotton and tobacco. But each year their yield was less and less because the soil was depleted of nutrients. Since for decades, only those two top crops had been planted. Crop rotation was the answer. Carver told them that yams, peanuts, beans, and cowpeas should be planted every other year to keep the soil rich and productive. But Carver knew he had to prove to them that these vegetables would bring in the same money as cotton. So he began to experiment with the plants. For example, he was able to make over 200 products from sweet potatoes, including flour, imitation coconut, vinegar, synthetic ginger, and chocolate, as well as dyes, paints, stains for furniture, and ink for fountain pens. Of course, it was the peanut that made Carver famous, and farmers anxious to use it. The peanut was a primary agent of change because it was easy to grow, and it enriched the soil, and it was a cheap source of protein. From the peanut, Carver produced milk, butter, Worcestershire sauce, punches, cooking oil, salad oil, medicines, hand lotion, face cream, and facial powder. Altogether, he produced more than 300 products from the peanut. In addition to his research, Carver saw the need to teach impoverished blacks how to improve their station in life. He realized that poor black farmers could not come to Tuskegee, so he invented what was called the Jessup Wagon to take Tuskegee to them. In 1906, Carver drew up the plans for this instructional vehicle, which was outfitted with farm equipment and students to demonstrate newer and more effective farming methods. Carver reached an even larger audience through the bulletins he issued as director of the Agricultural Experiment Station at Tuskegee. These publications served as manuals for farmers. They were written, typed, and edited by Carver and printed in the college print shop. They were provided to farmers free of choice. And the topics ranged from how to build up soil to three delicious meals every day for the farmer. There were 44 bulletins in all. All the bulletins contained three elements: simple cultivation information for the farmers, a little science for teachers, and some recipes for housewives. In 1921, Carver appeared before the United States Ways and Means Committee in Congress. He spoke as an expert witness on behalf of the peanut industry, which needed tariff protection. Carver demonstrated and described the large number of items that could be made from peanuts. He so amazed the members of Congress that he got a standing ovation But more importantly, he convinced the committee that peanuts should be protected. For this, he gained national fame and became known as the Peanut Man. This is Thomasine Holloway, bringing you Holloway's Black History Moments. Today, we will talk about Percy Lavon Julian. Percy Lavon Julian was a prolific research chemist and a pioneer in the field of chemical synthesis of medical drugs from plants. Percy Lavon Julian was born April 11, 1899, in Montgomery, Alabama, the son of a railroad clerk and the son of slaves. Julian was an excellent student in his Montgomery Elementary School. However, Montgomery had no high school for African Americans, so he only went to the eighth grade. His Montgomery school did its best to train him, but he was ill-prepared for college. Nevertheless, in 1916, he entered DePauw University as a sub-freshman, a term meaning that while he was taking freshman courses at the university, he was simultaneously taking secondary courses at the local high school. Percy studied hard, and in addition, he worked as a janitor to help pay for his college cost. Although his workload was heavy, Julian graduated on time in 4 years. He was valedictorian of his class and elected to membership in the Phi Beta Kappa Honor Society. He was overjoyed when he graduated with a chemistry major. And like his classmates, he expected to receive offers from private industry. However, he received no job offers, so he took a job at Fisk University in Nashville, Tennessee, as a chemistry instructor. He did that for 2 years. In 1922, Julian won an Austin Fellowship to study for a master's degree in chemistry at Harvard University. He received his master's degree there in 1923. But again, after his hard work, he received no job offers from private industry. So Julian traveled south to West Virginia State College and later Howard University, where he worked for several years teaching chemistry. In 1929, Julian received a Rockefeller Foundation grant to complete his doctorate in chemistry. He applied to Harvard, but they would not accept him for the doctorate because of his race. So he chose to study natural product chemistry at the University of Vienna in Austria. There he received his doctorate in September 1931. When Julian returned to the United States, he also returned to Howard University, where he worked with a colleague from Austria, Joseph Pilk, until departmental bickering caused his resignation in 1933. In need of a job, Dr. Julian returned to DePauw University as a research fellow, directing research projects for graduate chemistry students. When he was not mentoring students, Julian was working to complete his research on synthetic physostigmine, an expensive glaucoma drug. When his research was completed in 1935, Dr. Julian wrote a research paper for the Journal of the American Chemical Society detailing his research and the conclusions he had reached. The synthetic physostigmine became an inexpensive treatment for glaucoma, replacing the expensive treatment made from the Calabar bean. Glaucoma is an eye ailment in which the pressure of the eyeball increases when the fluid in the eye does not drain properly. The lack of drainage will damage the optic nerve and cause blindness. The drug physostigmin loosens the tissue by which fluid leaves the eye. Prior to Dr. Julian's discovery, only rich could afford treatment for glaucoma. In 1990, the American Chemical Society, the most prestigious group of scientists, declared that physostigmin was one of the 25 most important chemical discoveries ever made. Shortly after Julian's discovery of the anti-glaucoma drug, his grant ran out. He wanted a faculty position at DePaul University. However, the Board of Trustees vetoed the idea of a black man teaching white students. In 1936, Dr. Julian took the position of Director of Research for Soya Products at Glidden Laboratories in Chicago. It was at Glidden Laboratories that Julian discovered soya sterols and was able to produce commercial quantities of many sex hormones, including progesterone and testosterone. Again, this synthetic could be sold less expensively to the public while making large profits for Glidden. Julian stayed at the Glidden company for 18 years. And during these years, Julian secured more than 100 patents on his processes. During World War II, Dr. Julian discovered a fire retardant, a foam he called aerofoam. It extinguished oil and gas fires. This discovery saved the lives of thousands of soldiers. In 1948, Julian created the synthesis of Reichstein's substance S, which was the most widely used route to production of hydrocortisone and its derivatives, which are used in the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. In addition, he developed numerous other steroids. In 1953, Percy Julian founded Julian Laboratories and continued his work at his own company in medical chemistry. In 1961, Dr. Julian sold his laboratories for $2 million. Later, he formed the Julian Research Institute, a nonprofit research organization where young blacks could begin their research careers. Dr. Julian was a strong supporter of the NAACP and other civic organizations throughout his life. He also served as a consultant to many major pharmaceutical companies until his death on April 19th, 1975. This is Thomasine Holloway, bringing you Holloway's Black History Moments. And today, we will talk about Dr. Charles Richard Drew. Dr. Charles Drew is one of the most important scientists of the 20th century because he invented the blood bank. His research and development of the preservation of blood plasma saved tens of thousands of lives during World War II. And he was the first director of the blood bank program operated by the American Red Cross. Charles Richard Drew was born June 3, 1904 in Washington, D.C. He was the oldest of five siblings. Drew was an average student in elementary and high school, but a gifted athlete. And for his athleticism, he received an athletic scholarship to Amherst College. At Amherst, he was first exposed to racism. He was one of 13 African Americans in a student body of 600. For example, he was the best player on his football team, but they passed him over for captain. While at Amherst, Drew developed an interest in biology and medicine. He received his bachelor's degree from Amherst College in 1926 and knew he wanted to go to medical school, but for this he needed money. So to earn money for medical school, he took a job at Morgan State University, where he was both athletic director and an instructor in chemistry and biology. When he had saved enough money, Drew applied to medical colleges. Howard Medical College rejected him because he didn't have enough English credits, and Harvard University wanted him to wait a year. So Drew knew he was ready, so he applied to McGill University College of Medicine in Montreal, Canada. At McGill, he won the scholarship prize in neuroanatomy, was elected to the Medical Honor Society, Alpha Omega Alpha, and was part of the staff of the McGill Medical Journal. In 1933, Dr. Drew received both his medical degree and a Master of Surgery degree from McGill University. He graduated the second in his class, in a class of 137 people. After medical school, Dr. Drew received an internship and surgical residency at Montreal Hospital during the years 1933 to 1935. It was during this period that his interest in transfusion medicine began. At Montreal Hospital, he worked with bacteriology professor John Beattie on ways to treat shock with fluid replacement. After his residency at Montreal Hospital ended, Dr. Drew wanted to continue his training at the Mayo Clinic in the United States. But like many other black scholars, racial prejudice on the part of the college prevented this. So, to earn a living, Dr. Drew joined the faculty of Howard University College of Medicine. First, he was an instructor in pathology, and eventually, he was chief surgical resident. While at Howard, Dr. Drew received a Rockefeller Foundation fellowship to do research in blood and blood transfusion. He used this fellowship at Columbia University in New York. Dr. Drew had hoped to do a surgical residency. However, Columbia did not want him interacting with white patients because of racism. So they assigned him to work in a laboratory with Dr. John Scudder, who had set up an experimental blood bank. Dr. Drew was an excellent researcher, and his research at Columbia assessed previous blood and transfusion research, blood chemistry, and fluid replacement, and evaluated variables affecting the shelf life of stored blood. After completing his research in preparation for his doctorate, Charles Drew wrote a thesis entitled Banked Blood, A Study in Blood Preservation. This thesis made him the first African American to earn a medical doctorate from Columbia University, and it established him as a first-rate scientist. Dr. Drew's research findings were so outstanding that he was appointed head of the Blood for Britain Project, an American project to send much-needed blood and plasma to Great Britain, which was under attack from Germany during World War II. What is blood plasma? Blood plasma is a clear, yellow liquid that contains proteins and electrolytes that carry blood cells and other substances through the human body. Plasma can be used as a blood substitute to help replace fluids and to treat shock. The advantage to using plasma over whole blood in emergency situations is that it can be used with any blood type. It can be refrigerated longer than whole blood. It can be injected through veins, the skin, muscles, and it can be given in large doses. It was while Dr. Drew was supervising the Blood for Britain project that he passed his exam for the American Board of Surgery. The Blood for Britain project became a model for the Red Cross pilot program to mass produce dried plasma in New York in 1941. Dr. Charles Drew created blood mobiles for the Red Cross. They were mobile blood donation trucks with refrigerators. This work sealed his reputation as a pioneer and earned him the title of Father of the Blood Bank. Although an African American designed the blood bank program, African Americans were not permitted to donate blood. And in fact, Dr. Drew resigned his position with the Red Cross because the War Department of the United States directed that white blood could not be mixed with black's blood. Dr. Drew again returned to teach surgery at Harvard University. Tragically, Dr. Drew was killed in an automobile accident while returning from a medical conference at Tuskegee Institute in 1950. Today, every blood bank in the world is a living memorial to the genius of Dr. Charles Richard Drew. His name will live forever in medical history. The end.
And now, we will listen to some of Hal's wonderful classics.
Is to linger with you at the end of the day in a dream that's divine. Oh, my prayer is a rapture in blue with the world far away. Close to mine tonight, while our hearts are aglow. Oh, why don't you tell me the words that I'm longing to know? My prayer answer you gave, may they still be the same for as long as we live. You gave, may they still be the same for as long as we live.